and welcome to Saver, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about the Cuban sandwich.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. So hungry.
Lots of things happening right now. Yeah. I did just eat lunch, so I'm managing to not be starving despite this was a very craving heavy research.
Oh, yeah.
Section. Yeah. It was bad.
One of the hazards of the job, Lauren. One of the hazards of the job.
Oh, it is. And I just want y'all to know that, like, we feel you when you write in.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I love your show, but stop making me hungry. I can't stop, won't stop. That's just what it does.
That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, it is what it is. thank you to your listener, Amanda, for the suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, this is one of my very favorite sandwiches. Although Lauren and I were discussing beforehand, small town, rural Georgia girl, I have only had probably 5 in my lifetime.
What?
Yeah. And so when we're going to talk about a very infamous rivalry, city rivalry here. And I can't tell you for sure which version I've had, if either of those. Who knows? Huh. I just know pickles and mustard were involved and a lot of salty meat and buttery bread.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Those are all things that should be on there. Yes. yes. In either version or any version, I suppose. I grew up close enough to Miami that there were a lot of Cuban immigrants in the area. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale or a suburb of Fort Lauderdale called Coral Springs. And so, yeah, we were very lucky to have just amazing Cubano food everywhere. And so when you're like, I've had it like 5 times, I'm like 5 times a day? Like, what? what are you talking about? I've had countless Cuban sandwiches. And one of my favorites as well. And I remember the first time that I ever had one. It was, I moved to Florida when I was in maybe 4th grade. And the first time that I went to someone's birthday party, there was a big platter of Cuban sandwiches. Mm. And I was like, what is this magic?
See, I remember the first time I had a Cuban sandwich. We might not have even been in the Buckhead office in Atlanta. We might have been at our current office. It was sort of like you were saying when you went to, is it H Mart the first time?
Yeah.
When I moved to Atlanta from a small town, I made this list of all these foods I want to try, and I still have it. And sometimes I look at it and I get nostalgic of like, Annie. But it was on there, and I would just like work my way. But I didn't have a car, and Atlanta is not a good city if you don't have a car.
Yeah.
So certain things just took me like years to mark off that list. But Cuban sandwich was one of them. And I do feel like, again, this could have just been me moving from somewhere small to a city. I do feel like there was a surge of popularity right around the time I moved in the Cuban sandwich. Or maybe I was just becoming aware of them for the first time. Hard to say.
Yeah. But I suppose this brings us to our question.
Yes. The Cuban sandwich. What is it?
Well, the Cuban sandwich, sometimes called the Cubano, is a type of sandwich that it can be made in a number of ways. But the perhaps traditional makeup is ham, roast pork, salami, Swiss cheese, sliced pickles, and yellow mustard, stacked up on a long, soft, slightly crusty loaf of white wheat bread that's then pressed flat on a griddle and heated until the bread is toasty and the cheese is melty and everything is warmed up, just resulting in this absolute umami bomb. And the bread is, it should be crunchy on the outside and soft on the inside. And the different pork products lend this depth of textures and flavors. You get this bright twang from the mustard and the pickles, a crunch from the pickles. Oh, it is such comfort food.
Absolutely. Like every time I have one, I know I love them. And every time I have one, I'm like, this is even better than I remember. How is this possible?
They're so good. On a side of Maduro's? Oh, my heck. Okay, anyway. that's a subject for another day. To the sandwich. People get very particular about the exact ingredients. very particular. The ham should be a sweet and salty honeyed ham. The roast pork is marinated in a Cuban-style pork mojo, which is a type of sauce made from fresh garlic paste, oregano, cumin, and salt and pepper, all bound together with olive oil and the juice of sour oranges. Ideally, sour oranges. They're sometimes hard to find in the U.S., and so I've seen like a combination of orange juice and lime juice used, but sour orange is the best. It's really like bright and garlic spicy and herbal. Oh, so good. Some people smoke the pork roast as well. The salami should be Genoa style, which is a type of salt cured pork sausage seasoned with garlic and pepper and wine and allowed to dry and ferment until it firms up into like a mildly spicy product that's still tender with fat and has this really distinct tang from fermenting. Bacteria poop.
Wow, another surprise bacteria poop.
Yep, yep. It's everywhere. It's delicious.
It is. Mm-hmm.
The bread involved should be Cuban bread, which is a type of wheat flour bread made in these long baguettes with some lard or shortening in the dough that makes it really flaky and tender, and the crust is so thin and crisp, almost like a cracker. And depending on where it's made, it might be a flattish and kind of squared off at the ends or rounder with bulbed ends. Different people disagree about some of the other details as well. Some say that sour dill pickles are the only way to go, only sliced long ways and sliced super thin. I have had it with other types of pickles, though.
Oh.
Yep.
Well, blasphemous. I love the specificity.
Sliced long ways is important.
Okay.
I've had it with American cheese instead of Swiss.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Some folks don't include the salami, and that is, in fact, the way that I had it growing up in Fort Lauderdale. I didn't know that that was a thing that people felt very strongly about. Now I really want to try one with salami. The way that you slice the roast pork can vary. Like you can do like thicker, chewy slices versus pulled chunks versus like paper thin, melty slices, which is my preference. Some people add a spread of mayo or a spread of butter. The way you stack the ingredients matters. I do not even want to talk about whether the mustard goes on both sides of the bread. I don't have time today.
Well, you're going to have to share that with me later. Now I'm just going to be wondering, what does Lauren think about the mustard on the bread? Why should I be thinking about the mustard on the bread? Oh, no.
Man.
What if I embarrass myself in front of someone? I don't want that. I don't think you want that for me.
There's opinions. Some people use a panini press with ridges. Some people don't press the sandwich at all. You can serve at room temperature, and you can serve it with lettuce and tomato. I am only reporting the facts.
I like this like touch of horror and judgment that's happening.
So you talk about serving a Cubano room temperature with lettuce and tomato. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's no longer a Cubano. That's a different sandwich. Leave my Cubano alone.
Get your lettuce away from me. If you come near me with the panini press, I swear. Okay. Noted.
You know, it's fine. It's fine. I eat food the way that you like to eat it.
Yes.
Your choices are valid.
Mm-hmm. You look physically pained to say it, but I do believe you believe it. And I will say, like, in every article I read, people have strong opinions about food. We always encounter that when we research, but for this one, I feel like it was in every article I read.
Yeah.
Like, people came out strong with, don't you dare even talk to me. if it's more than three pickles, you're out of here.
Yeah, it's something I found myself, it's so funny because I didn't know that I had such strong opinions until I started reading all of these things and seeing and like reading all these different recipes and the photographs the people included with these recipes, like some of them, like I looked at the sandwich and it looked delicious, okay, but like I was like, that's not a Cuban.
Something primordial within you arose.
Yeah, my like lizard brain like reared up and was like, no.
Okay. I'll be wary with the Cubans in front of you, the Cuban sandwiches.
Gosh. But anyway.
All right. Okay. What about the nutrition?
Well, it depends on exactly how you make it, clearly. But, you know, this tends to be a pretty calorie-dense food because of the fats that the ingredients contain. It's usually pretty high in salt content, but also high in protein. It will fill you up and it will keep you going. As always, I recommend eating vegetables when you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have too many numbers for you.
We have two number-related facts. there is a Cuban sandwich food and art festival every year in Ybor City, which is near Tampa. It features international entries into their sandwich competition. The sandwich competition, by the way, is called the Smackdown. And it includes categories for historic, non-traditional, traditional slash world's best. And there is a popular vote as well.
Oh, that sounds like a delicious competition.
Right?
But again, I bet it gets pretty intense in there.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not like, positive that I would want to figure out which sandwiches go in the non-traditional and the traditional categories.
Exactly. And then, I mean, as we're about to get into the historic section, it could be a little contentious as well. Well, if anyone's ever been, let us know.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. They're not sure as of right now whether the festival is being held this year. It was supposed to go off in May, right now it's rescheduled for November. I think November 8th. But we'll see. We'll see how the world's doing.
We'll see. Yeah. I will say this episode in a lot of ways reminded me of the Muffaletta episode we did.
Yeah.
So there were numbers on like how many slices of bread in one city or one place makes for these. And it's a lot. Well, in Miami and Tampa it is.
Yeah.
I learned that some subways in Miami have Cuban sandwiches and potbelly too, I think, which blew my mind. This is like when I went to Australia the first time and there was avocado. Which, back then, you couldn't get that, at least to the subways I would go to.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, I had to fight to get my first Cuban sandwich. Subways? I can't speak for quality. I won't make a stand on that.
Oh, I've never had one of those from a Subway. I can't tell you what it's like.
Mm-hmm. I have my thoughts. My suspicions.
Yeah.
But I'm open-minded in many areas. Not all, but many. But okay, we've been hinting at this history behind the sandwich for a while.
Yeah. And we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, yes, this episode is a tale of two cities, Miami and Tampa, who both fiercely lay claim to the Cuban sandwich. However, the sandwich, or at least the precursor to it, is from Cuba. It's from Cuba.
Yes.
So, I'm just going to say it.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. Lauren, I hope this doesn't change a friendship.
No, I'm fine.
I'm just trying to report the facts as an unbiased outsider.
No, it would make sense that the Cuban sandwich is somehow from Cuba.
It does indeed. So the Cuban sandwich, or the beginnings of it, mm-hmm. probably dates back 500 years. Historians think it was the invention of the Taino tribe on Cuba. Before the arrival of Europeans, the Taino tribe was one of these three cultures that lived on Cuba. Tampa food chemist Jorge Astorquiza believes that the tribe used a cracker-like bread product made from yuca to sandwich either fish or some type of bird into this early Cuban sandwich. When the Spanish arrived on the island, they brought pigs with them. And not long after that, the indigenous people were introduced to things like ham and pork, and those meats found their way into the sandwich. And the bread was swapped out for something more doughy, more bready. The Cuban tobacco industry spread to Florida in the mid-19th century, first arriving at Key West and then on up to Tampa. And Tampa was a growing port city with the right climate for tobacco and a fancy new railroad. So it's kind of ideal for this whole jump for the tobacco industry. Mm-hmm. And from 1880 to 1890, the population of Tampa went from about 700 to 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of folks of Cuban, Italian, and Spanish descent settled in Ybor City, which, yes, is a neighborhood founded by Cuban cigar manufacturers.
Yeah, these immigrants in Key West and then Tampa were the first major populations of Cubans in America, mostly working-class people fleeing the struggle for independence in Cuba. And Ybor City was named for this cigar factory owner, one Vicente Martinez Ybor, who moved his operation to the Tampa area after a fire destroyed his original factory in Key West.
And Ybor City was once known as the cigar capital of the world, at its peak producing more than Havana. And most of the people that lived there worked in these factories and needed a lunch that was quick and convenient and inexpensive, like a sandwich, mayhaps?
Mayhaps.
This is where it takes a turn. This is our big twist in the Cuban sandwich episode. So the Cubans who immigrated to Florida brought their Cuban sandwich with them, where it was influenced by the Spanish and Italian cuisine in the area, which explains the salami, for instance.
One of the original bakers of Cuban bread in Ybor was a Sicilian, when Francisco Ferlita, who opened this bakery there called La Joven Francesca in 1896. The bakery would close in the 1970s, but it ran for that entire time and now houses the Ybor City Museum.
Yeah. So at this time, to set the sandwich apart from the new Florida take on it, Cubans living in Florida started calling it the Cuban sandwich. You wouldn't need to call it that, Cuba, because it was just sandwich. Mm-hmm. Or by some accounts, English speakers started calling it the Cuban sandwich because they mostly saw Cubans eating it, while Spanish speakers called it mixto because of the assortment of meats on the sandwich, mixed meats.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, at the time, the sandwich probably came with ham, pork, turkey, Genoa salami, pickle slices, perhaps three, which I love so much, mustard, Swiss cheese, served on a long white bread loaf. According to the menu at Columbia Restaurant, a Ybor City institution, the sandwich, which they called, quote, a Tampa treasure, began as a lunch for cigar workers in the 1890s. It's been on their menu since they opened in 1905. This restaurant comes up pretty much every article I read about the Cuban sandwich.
Yeah.
And the menu continues, quote, the sandwiches underwent changes as immigrants from different countries came to Ybor City. The Spanish brought the fine ham, the Sicilians the Genoa salami, the Cubans the mojo marinated roast pork, the Germans and Jews the Swiss cheese, pickle, and mustard. Which is the lovely story. However, some food historians point out that this may be the stuff of sandwich legend rather than actual history. There's not any real proof to anything they said. I mean, it makes sense in some ways, but there's nothing like concrete to back it up. And, you know, certainly pickles were probably around. I know one of the food historians was like, you know, you can't really say. Pickles were probably there. And also, of note, Miami was still a pretty new city in 1905 when Columbia opened. I'm not trying to stir up anything. I'm just
Miami was only incorporated in 1896, whereupon it only had like 300 residents. And it would not have a large population of Cuban immigrants until the 1960s, when many were fleeing the revolution. So
right.
So just saying that, just saying it right there.
Yeah, we'll just leave that there. Mm-hmm. There is a popular legend that says that the sandwich was actually the result of a contest. And I love how many episodes we have where contests mm-hmm. are involved. Amongst Ybor City's cigar factory owners, they offered a reward to the chef that could come up with something that could fill their workers up and keep them going, as you say, Lauren, and not make them sleepy.
Hmm.
Which, also fun, also no record of that either, so yeah. Not sure.
Yeah. Then, in 1915, a Spanish immigrant by the name of Juan More opened a bakery in Ybor called La Primera. And they specialized in Cuban-style baked goods, including Cuban bread. And they scored their bread, you know, like gave it the cut along the top so that some steam can escape during baking so that the bread will rise more evenly. They did that by placing this thin, sharp strip of palmetto leaf lengthwise along the loaf before baking. And the offshoot, La Segunda Bakery, still makes it to this day, still owned by the same family.
Oh.
They're one of the Cuban bakeries that, like, certainly if you have had a Cuban sandwich in Tampa, possibly if you've had one anywhere,
yeah,
there's a decent chance that they baked that bread.
Yeah, I think that was the place I was thinking of when I mentioned how it reminded me of the mm-hmm. muffaletta and those stats of how much bread they sent out every mm-hmm. day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. That came up in there was a SmackDown between two, like, NPR writers, one from Tampa, one from Miami.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, the one from Tampa, bought that up. It's like, probably in Miami you were having.
Oh, burn.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
This bread. Yeah, it was so good. So Ybor City took a hit during the Great Depression when cigarettes became a cheaper tobacco alternative. And then during the 1950s, again, as more and more automobiles took the street, the streets in that neighborhood were largely too narrow for cars. So a lot of it, unfortunately, ended up getting destroyed. But in 1974, it was designated a national landmark.
The first Miami-style Cuban sandwich might have been served that same year, 1974, at a restaurant called the Latin American Cafeteria in Miami.
In 2012, Tampa put forth an official resolution to name the sandwich the, quote, historic Tampa Cuban sandwich.
Oh.
Yeah. Bold move. Rolls right off the tongue. And it came with a very specific recipe for what it entails. Like, it's like 10 steps, ingredients, methods.
Uh-huh.
I loved it.
The order in which you stack everything, that mm-hmm. those three pickles.
Yes.
More, no less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Emperor Pickletine. I can come up with that later. Yeah. And it's really fun. I love recipes that read like you're reading a science experiment or something. Like, I loved it. But anyway, Miami didn't. They were not having it. In response to the resolution, the mayor of that city, Tomas Regalado, said the Cuban sandwich came in a raft from Cuba. And Astorquiza, which is the chef we mentioned earlier, when asked about this, he said, to call Miami the originator of the Cuban sandwich is the biggest lie ever. It has absolutely no roots. There were no Cubans in Miami at the time. It was all swampland.
Wow.
Yeah. The biggest lie ever.
All the time. Ever. Period. Yes. That's it.
It might be one of the biggest sandwich lies ever. I'm not coming out. I'm not saying. I'm just saying if it were true.
Gosh.
I'm going to get so much angry messages. Food historians say that due to the large Cuban population in Miami, many of them arriving after the Cuban Revolution, like you said, that the sandwich went mainstream because of that. So it might not have originated there, but Miami certainly propelled it to stardom. And there are a lot of sassy, angry, outraged news pieces that came out of both of these cities from all of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it continues. One of my favorite pieces that I read was back in 2019, the New York Times crossword Sunday crossword specifically, had a clue that read, a city famous for its Cuban sandwiches. And it was five letters long, and the answer was not Miami.
Ooh, crossword trolling. Wow. I can't imagine, like, I go, you know, I wake up in the morning, having my cup of coffee, trying to relax.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
And then getting trolled by the dang crossword puzzle.
By the New York Times crossword.
Oh, oof. I'm sure they got a lot of anger.
But yeah, I'd say that right around when Tampa tried to pass that resolution, it really started rising to stardom in a lot of different ways. In 2014, the Cuban sandwich had a starring role in Jon Favreau's film Chef. There's this really cute scene of John Leguizamo like making the roast pork, like making the mojo and making the pork, and it's like inappropriately sexy. I'm like, John Leguizamo, get out of here. And then in 2018, a group of students from the University of Miami made a documentary about the sandwich called Mixto Cubano, The Origin of the Cuban Sandwich.
Yeah. People are determined to lay claim to this sandwich in a very specific way, and it just makes me laugh. Because we can relate.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And they're, you know, like the sundae or, what are some of the other ones? Yeah. Like just, hey, it's cool. It's cool to be passionate about stuff. It's cool to have, you know, local pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feel that Cuban sandwich in your heart.
Yeah. Just. Oh, man. Oh, I definitely have a Cuban sandwich in my heart, or at least my arteries. I don't know.
Either way, I want one right now.
So much.
Yes.
Oh, so much. Okay. That's fine, though. Being from the east coast of Florida, South Florida, I didn't really get over to Tampa, Ybor area until I was in college. I went to University of Florida up in Gainesville. And I had some friends from the Tampa St. Pete area, but I've hung out in Ybor, but I've never had a Cuban sandwich there, which I'm now shocked about. I'm pretty sure, did I eat there or did we just go to clubs? I'm not positive.
Eternal question.
Yeah. Yeah. But now I'm like, oh man, I need to go and I need to have some of this Cuban sandwich that has salami on it, and I will accept it however they make it, and I'm sure it will be delicious.
Oh, I'm sure about that. Would you think, like, in Atlanta, which version would I be getting?
The Miami style.
So the Miami one is perhaps, like, more mainstream, like
I think
said.
It's probably more ubiquitous, yeah.
Okay. Well, then, I'll have to seek it out as well. Do a taste test.
Yeah. Ooh.
And if any listeners know the answer to these Cuban sandwich questions or have Cuban sandwich opinions or from these cities, oh, please.
Yeah.
Send them their way.
Oh, my heck. Yeah. Us. Yeah. Or I don't know, like if you also have like memories of Guavoween and like, you know, if you are also a goth of a certain age hung out in Ybor, you know, I don't know. Write in. Let us know how all that went.
A goth of a certain age needs to be a book or something. I'm just going to throw that out there. But yes, we always love hearing from you. And speaking of, we have some listener mail.
We do, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Smackdown.
Smackdown. Yeah.
Sandwich City Smackdown. Chloe wrote, I recently listened to your episode on Box Bag Wine and was surprised that Goon wasn't given an honorable mention. Goon is the name affectionately given to Box Cask Wine in Australia with golden oaks Fruity Lexia being a prominent brand. It even has a phrase that goes with it. Fruity Lexia makes you sexier. Love it. But on to the main point of this email. You briefly touched on games related to cask wine in your podcast. And Guna Fortune was missing. Yes, we know. In Australia, this is a game commonly played at 18th birthdays and New Year's Eve parties. Partygoers will each bring a box of wine. We then remove the inner bags, known as goon sacks, from the boxes and pin them to the Hills Hoist clothing line. Players stand underneath the Hills Hoist, which is then spun around. When the Hills Hoist comes to a stop, each player that happens to be below a goon sack must drink a previously designated amount of goon from the sack that's landed above their head. I don't know many party games more quintessentially Aussie than Goon of Fortune. Okay. I love this. I love it. And I wanted to read it because I know we've read several about it, but I feel like each one has slightly different rules. Which, like, the specific brand, and then this one was a designated amount, whereas others, it was, like, not a designated amount.
Yeah, yeah. This is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I very much enjoyed reading about this. I'm still shocked we didn't, because clearly it's a big deal.
Clearly it's a big thing. I think it was one of those, you know, search term issues, because, you know, not knowing the term goon.
Right. And generally searching box or bagged wine instead of cask wine.
Right, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No. See, sometimes you make those Google mistakes. We all know about those Google mistakes.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
Lauren made one this very episode when she looked up the Subway Cuban sandwich in an ad break.
I regretted it, y'all. So that minor existential crisis aside, all right, Amanda wrote, I usually don't have much to contribute when it comes to writing in, but after hearing your boxed wine episode and the throwaway snippet about alternative methods to opening wine, I knew my time had come. Back when going traveling and pre-gaming before parties were a thing, me and some friends were getting ready in our hotel rooms in Vegas. One of the girls was kind enough to bring a sickeningly sweet Moscato for the rest of us who preferred not to immediately jump into Jack Daniels and Coke. The only problem was it wasn't a screw top and none of us had a wine opener. Now, granted, we could have most likely gone down to the gift shop and bought a wine opener in hindsight, maybe even asked the concierge, but I had seen all sorts of nifty ways to open a wine bottle without an opener. And what better scenario to test them out than right now? I tried the shoe trick, banging away at walls and floors with the bottom of the bottle to no avail, but the chagrin of our neighbors. I tried wrapping it in a towel and also hammering it out, surprise to no one, still no dice. Gravity was not working for us, and we didn't have a screw to try that trick. But we're a bunch of ladies in Vegas, and I, being the mom friend, came prepared with tweezers. I plunged those poor tweezers straight into the cork and tried to wiggle it out, only to have another problem on my hands. The cork was falling to pieces everywhere. After several agonizing minutes of hacking away at this poor cork, completely ruining my tweezers, we got the bottle open, with a few cork pieces left floating in there and all over the bathroom floor. It might not have been the quickest or easiest wine cork hack, but it got the job done and gave us all a pretty hilarious story to look back on.
I have been there. And it's funny, there are a few times I've ever felt, so I ended up using a brush, like the handle of a brush.
Okay.
And there are a few times I've ever felt more like a monkey or some kind of creature trying to get into something than that. But I feel Amanda, who also was, she was the listener that recommended the Cuban sandwich, so thanks for that. Mm-hmm. I feel it was pretty ingenious, tweezers.
Tweezers, yeah. I don't know. Gosh. I don't know what I would have done. I would have called the concierge.
I definitely have done that before. I also once was in Vegas and I had a corkscrew and it broke. And instead of calling the concierge, like all my friends were like, we can just go get a new one. We can call the concierge. But I was like, I'm going to fix this. And I spent like way too long trying to figure it out. But I did. But like by then, everybody sort of moved on. I'm still there like, I'll get it.
No, I can get it. Yeah. It can still function.
Yeah,
I'm man the tool maker. I am clever. Yes. Yeah, no, I see you. I see you.
Yeah.
No, but but huzzah. Good job. You got it. Hey, you got your wine.
Yes. And I hope that sweet Moscato was as worthy of effort as you put into it.
Yes.
Thanks to both of those listeners for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening. And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.